Welcome, everybody. Welcome to Sangha Live on what is a very spring-like day here. I'm on the unceded territory of the Seashell Nation in Kanata, which is the First Nations name for Canada, and the Seashell Nation is in the Vancouver area. And it's just very lovely to be here with you and practice with you. Well, for some of you it's the morning, and for some of you it's the evening. It's just wonderful to be able to practice with people from all over the world. So we're going to begin with a meditation, and it's going to be a metta meditation, bringing in an aspect of ethics. Today we're going to explore the Tibetan wheel of the life, and I really like to see that this Tibetan wheel of the life is a mirror and can remind us with some of the mental states that we can dwell in, that we occupy. And we know that the practice of loving kindness, the practice of the metta bhavana, can be a real salve to help with some of the mental states that we may be assailed by. And just remembering that the prince, before the prince woke up to the truth and became a Buddha, the prince was assailed by many mental states, in fact was assailed by all the mental states of the different realms on the wheel of the life. So if you allow yourself to become comfortable, just becoming aware of the body, just having a sense of your body settling onto your meditation spot. And really see if the mind can settle into the heart, mind, heart, become one. And the mind can settle if we can let go of all the thoughts or the things we think we should have been doing or needed to do. So if a thought has come up, I haven't turned the gas off, or I haven't turned the cooker off, or there was something that you really needed to do, then I invite you to go and do that and come back so that you can be fully here and fully present. If you spend your whole meditation thinking of what I needed to have done or what I'd forgotten and what should have been done, you will miss the whole meditation. So just, again, an invitation to do what needs to be done so that you can arrive fully here into this moment of now. We reverence the earth and give thanks for its food, shelter, and solidity in our bodies. We reverence the water and give thanks for its rain, its moisture, its fluidity in our bodies. We reverence the fire and give thanks for the sun, the heat, and the warmth in our bodies. We reverence the wind and give thanks for the air, the inhale, the exhale in our bodies. We reverence space and give thanks for the space within us and surrounding our bodies. We reverence consciousness and give thanks for its awareness within and outside our bodies. We reverence the Buddha, the perfectly enlightened one, the shower of the way. We reverence the Dharma, the teaching of our guides, which leads from darkness to light. We reverence the Sangha, the fellowship of all our communities that inspires and guides. The practice of loving kindness. So in this first stage, we become aware of the self. Really see if you can see yourself in your mind's eye. Really see if you can look at yourself with warm, kind, loving eyes. What does the body feel when we open up towards the self, when we radiate warmth and kindness to ourselves? What does the body feel like? With deeds of loving kindness, I pay attention to my beautiful body, saying to yourselves, with deeds of loving kindness, I pay attention to my beautiful body. And if there are any voices that are saying, my body isn't beautiful, just ask those voices to relax so you can receive this medicine, this ancient medicine of loving kindness. And saying to ourselves, with open-handed generosity, I pay attention to my beautiful body. And saying to ourselves, with stillness, simplicity, and contentment, I cultivate within my body. With stillness, simplicity, and contentment, I cultivate within my body. And remember to breathe. The breath is a source of loving kindness. Really see if you can breathe fully through the practice. And saying to ourselves, with truthful communication, I purify my speech with truthful communication. I purify my speech. And saying to ourselves, with stillness, simplicity, and contentment, I purify my mind. With stillness, simplicity, and contentment, I purify my mind. And just sitting, radiating loving kindness towards yourself. Really see if you can look at yourself with warm, kind, loving eyes. And just know that these phrases are training. They're training principles to help train the heart mind. We're going to bring to mind a good friend, preferably somebody we're not romantically involved with, not because this is a bad idea, it's just that it's conditional and we just really training the heart mind to radiate loving kindness unconditionally. And so we bring to mind a good friend, and let's see if we can have a sense of this good friend in the heart mind. You may be able to see this good friend. You may be able to hear this good friend. You may even be able to have the sense of holding this good friend. Just connecting to this good friend with one of the sense doors. Maybe their name has come to mind. And we say to ourselves, with deeds of loving kindness, I pay attention towards my friend. with open-handed generosity, I pay attention towards my friend. With stillness, simplicity, and contentment, I have gratitude towards my good friend. With truthful communication, I speak with my good friend. Let's really allow these phrases to vibrate in the body and really see if you can feel the phrases as I say the phrases and as you repeat the phrases to yourself. With mindfulness clear and radiant, I engage with my good friend. Now we bring to mind a neutral person, somebody who we just don't know. And this is an interesting stage because this is the majority of the world. There are just so many people who we don't know. And it could be somebody who lives near you, could be somebody who you've seen on a flat screen. We could even bring to mind the person who packaged the bread, the person who harvests the grain to make the bread, or imagine the person who put together your car that you drive in, or even the person perhaps who built the house or the apartment that you live in. There are so many neutral people. Perhaps imagine the person who packed the food on the supermarket shelf. So bring into mind a neutral person and saying to ourselves, with deeds of loving kindness, I radiate this towards the neutral person. And really see if you can have a sense of being open to this stage of the practice. with open-handed generosity. I think about this person. With stillness, simplicity, and contentment, I bring to mind this neutral person. With truthful communication, I interact with this person, this neutral person. And with mindfulness clear and radiant, I engage with this neutral person. And just know that these stages represent archetypes. This neutral person represents all the neutral people in the world. And we will come by these neutral people daily. Bring into mind the enemy of the mind. These people are enemies of the mind because when we think about them, we get irritated, we get activated. When we bring them to mind, we start having a dialogue in our heads about what we're going to say to them, what we're going to do. So just bringing to mind somebody you have an irritation with. If you bring to mind somebody you have a strong conflict with and it completely discombobulates you in this practice, then choose somebody else, because you can only work with somebody where your heart is able to crack slightly open. So bring into mind the enemy of the mind. And saying to ourselves, with deeds of loving kindness, I'm open to interacting with this person. With deeds of loving kindness, I'm open to interacting with this person. And so if you're not open, choose somebody else. This will help you to train the mind so that one day you can bring those people to mind where your heart is completely closed down, banished from the mind. With open-handed generosity, I welcome this person. Notice if tension is arising in the body. And just know that any thoughts that are arising is just story. That's all it is story. And saying silently to ourselves, with truthful communication, I interact with this person. With stillness, simplicity, and contentment, I interact with this person. And with mindfulness clear and radiant, I come into communication with this person. With mindfulness clear and radiant, I come into communication with this person. And now we bring ourselves, the friend, the neutral person, the enemy of the mind in community. And we have a sense that all of us are radiating deeds of loving kindness. Having a sense that all of us are radiating open-handed generosity, radiating stillness, simplicity, and contentment. All of us communing with truthful communication, and all of us doing our best to come into community with mindfulness clear and radiant. And we send this medicine out into the world. Including all sentient beings, no matter what their past is, what they've done. We send this medicine out into the world to all living beings. May all beings be happy. May all beings be well. May all beings be free from the roots and the causes of suffering. May all beings be at peace. And just taking a moment to check in to the body. And just notice. Notice the quality of your thoughts, of your feelings, of your emotions right now. And just thanking yourself for doing this practice and cultivating positive mental states. Okay, so welcome. It would be really lovely to perhaps just have a gauge of how this practice was for you. If you could chat, if you could write into the chat, if you're able to, and just perhaps say how it was for you, what happened for you. Yeah, it'd be great. And of course, you can always hit the tab, ask a question. Thank you, it felt very calming for me. Powerful, meaning, peaceful, grounding, comforting. Yeah, deep, amazing, thank you. Nourishing, calming, centering, calming, connecting, relaxing, uplifting. Yeah. And just an invitation for if there's anybody where it was that you just didn't like it, that it actually completely dysregulated you, that's welcome too. Yeah. Relaxing, uplifting. Quite challenging, but also grounding and nurturing. Yeah, thank you for that. It is a can be a challenging practice. Yeah, great to stand next to my enemy. Yeah. Actually, I apologize actually because I didn't give the instruction to. Actually, when you have the friend, perhaps not to choose somebody who has passed, but maybe that's who was meant to come. And I'm just really sorry to hear, hear that. So just really, just as your friend is in that bardo, just radiating, love and warmth. And well done for coming here today. Yeah, that voice, I just want to say that when that negative voice comes, there's a couple of ways you can work with the voice. You can ask it to relax. You can ask that voice to step back. You can actually think, whose voice is that in your head? Because often that voice in your head can be a teacher, it can be a parent. And so it's not our voice, and we can just tell it to shut up and just go away because it's not our voice. So there's really great ways of working with that voice. And I always ask whenever we do the practice, it's important just to ask how it was for you before we jump deep into the Dharma talk. So thank you. For all of what you've written here, challenging with the enemy revealed to me, I had more forgiveness and compassion, growth to kindly embrace, recognizing that different people, I have played each of these roles. Yes, thank you. So lovely and needed. Thank you. I just want to just end with this, that actually, again, as I said, these stages in the practice of the metta are archetypes, they and we of course we've all played the role of the enemy, the neutral, the friend. And so in a way, we are working with ourselves. So yeah, just as somebody said, great recognition, because that's what it is. We really are working with ourselves. Yeah. So well done. Okay, so I'm going to hover above my screen because I just want you to, we're going to focus on the wheel of life. And so I just want to show a picture of it so that we can just be really aware of the wheel of life being held. Almost looks like this ferocious figure, it's wrathful. I just want to remind us in Buddhism that we do have wrathful deities, yeah? And that wrathful energy at times is often needed. And we're not going to be focusing on the outer rim. I don't know if you can see my mouse there, the outer rim. We're not going to be focusing on the outer rim. We're going to be focusing on these six realms and also the pig, cock, and snake. So that's what we're going to be focusing on, these six realms. I just wanted you to just have an idea of what this Tibetan wheel of life looks like. And as I say, there's always a deity holding the wheel of life. In fact, I see it as the deities holding the earth. You can really have this sense of deities holding the earth, and we're being held by these energies. Okay, so let me just stop there. Okay, so let's talk about this Tibetan wheel of life. You can really see it as a tantric path which is strewn with all these symbols, and these symbols really are a path to awakening. Yeah, and so I'm just going to really talk about the context of the wheel of life first, and just that the symbols are fingers pointing to the moon. And I just love that aphorism. You know, in a way, when we did this practice of loving kindness, the loving kindness is just a finger pointing to something, and often we focus on the practice, and we think, yes, we're doing the practice, and when we get off the cushion, we've lost it, because we've just focused on the practice. And if we were focusing on what the practice was pointing to, when we come off the when we come off the cushion and go out into the world, we will see what it is that we're pointing to, and we will be able to begin to radiate loving kindness towards all beings in the world. Yeah. So the wheel of life is very old, and we've got the Hinayana mixed in with that, ethical observances. We've got the Mahayana devotion of the Buddha in this, and we've got symbols in it that point to meditation and practice of Vajrayana. And so we've got all the different vehicles of Buddhism connected in this amazing wheel of life. Yeah. And so, as I said, we're not going to be focusing on that outer circle, but just to say that the wheel of life consists of four concentric circles of different sizes. And I refer to the cock, the snake, the pig. That's in the inner, like in the inner part. And actually, it's in a way, as I do this and I'm looking through it in this inner part, it's almost like I can see the amygdala. The amygdala in the brain is like a almond shape. And when that amygdala gets activated, we can really get kind of pivoted into this vicious cycle of the cock, snake, and the pig. And the reason why I call it this vicious cycle of the cock, the snake, the pig, because what's happening is in that inner circle is that each animal is chasing each other. Yeah. Each animal is biting the tail in front of the other. And so we've got this greed, hatred, and delusion going around and around and around. Yeah. And this can be, for many of us, our direct experience. Sometimes we are just in greed, craving. Many of us have been in greed and craving. When can we travel again? You know, I included myself. When can we travel again? When are we going to be out of this lockdown? When? And we get into this craving, and when it doesn't happen, we can move into hatred. We can move into aversion. We get angry. Yeah. And when we get angry, we can become deluded. And so this is how we just are this cock, snake, pig in a tiny amygdala, which is flapping away because it just gets activated. Yeah. Mm. And then in the second circle, it's divided into two halves. Yeah. And in one half, there is the sense of the of us beings moving upwards into joy, carrying prayer wills, carrying the lotus will. Yeah. And then in the other half, it's dark, and human beings are plunging headlong downward with fear, horror, and terror, and they're all chained together. Yeah. And so we're going to be looking at the six realms. This is what I want to focus on. So in a way, this wheel of life can be like a mirror. Yeah, it's a mirror that can reflect our lives back. My teacher Sangharachita calls the wheel of life, I'm going to call it the hall of mirrors, but my teacher says the wheel of life is made up of mirrors. But just now I see the wheel of life as the hall of mirrors. And each time we look into the mirror, we can see more of ourselves. We can begin to see who we really are and accept ourselves. Yeah. When we look into the mirror, we may actually see that pig, cock, and snake. And when we look again, we can be faced with progressing along the path, moving upwards into the place of awareness, awakening, or we can be stumbling, yeah, on the path and just falling down and down into the hell realms, yeah. And so I call them six mirrors that reflect our mental states. Yeah, six mirrors reflecting our mental states, and you could see it as a mind map. Yeah, and so the first mental state that I want to speak to is the God realm, and this is a very interesting realm, the God realm, the realm of pleasure, and it can be depicted with beautiful trees, and every wish is instantly gratified. You know, in a way, it represents the household that the prince was born into this hedonistic God realm, yeah. And it's said that the white Buddha, Virochana, playing the lute, playing a melody of impermanence, playing this melody of impermanence, because in this God realm, it's not going to last. And in this realm, this is the realm where so often people in this realm are spiritually bypassing. We become complacent. In fact, we could say that many celebrities can live in this realm. Even we can live in this realm. Once upon a time, I was very much in this realm. I fluctuated in this realm and the hell realm. Yeah. And, you know, what's really important about this realm, because this is a mental state we want to be in. We just always want to be happy. We just want to be happy. We just always want to be blissed out. We meditate so that we can be blissed out. We meditate so that we can always be happy. Yeah. And actually, we've missed the point of what the practice of meditation is pointing to, because the practice of meditation is pointing to impermanence. And yet, many of us are wanting to meditate because we want to be happy 24/7. And in this God realm, we know we may experience real bliss, we may experience real joy. And it is really important, if we're practicing, it's important in life to have moments of joy and bliss. Because if we have no moments of joy or bliss, it can be really difficult for people to keep motivated for living. We know that we lose many people along the way because they are just never, ever able to experience some kind of happiness and joy. And so it is important. I'm not saying that this realm isn't important. And what I'm saying is that everything is impermanent and it's not possible to stay in this godlike realm. Yeah. And then there is the mirror. We look into the second mirror. It's the mirror of jealousy. The world of the titans, the demigods, the warlike beings, the asuras, at war with the gods, fighting for the celestial trees, fighting for the desires. And we know that many of us can be really resentful of other people's well-being. Many of us can be really jealous of other people, so much so it can cultivate real hatred. You know, people do some really unskillful things out of this mental state of jealousy. But just bringing it down to every day and just really thinking about, you know, where do we have resentment? The love, the practice of loving kindness is one of the the first stage of the Brahma Viharas. And so we cultivate loving kindness. And then hopefully we are able to move into one of the Brahma Viharas, which is called mudita, sympathetic joy, having real joy for people's happiness, having real joy for people's well-beings. Yeah. And the green Buddha, the Buddha Amoghasiddhi, appears holding the flaming sword. Yeah. And to remind us of the wisdom that we really need to know, the wisdom, and to touch into the sword of wisdom, maybe even Manjushri's sword of wisdom. And often this place, this place of jealousy, this place of envy, this place of resentment is often takes place in the world of politics. Yeah. And politics, not just in the world of our governments, but even the world on everyday life, the politics and how we polarize against each other. Yeah. And this is a place of restlessness. This state of mind is often striving for, yeah, just striving for more material wealth. In fact, we could say in this stage that one really thinks that happiness is based on material wealth. Happiness is based on the material things that we have. Yeah. And so this might be a mirror that can reflect us back. And it's really great not to give ourselves a hard time, to just become aware of what are some of the mental states that we dwell in. Yeah, is to just have some awareness. This is another reason why we meditate, is to become aware of our mental states. As I said earlier on, if we go back to the prince before the prince became woke, the prince became aware of their mental states, and their mental states was one of jealousy, was one of hatred, was one of greed, was one of boredom. And so it wasn't until becoming aware of these mental states that the prince was able to wake up to the truth. So if we look into this hall of mirrors, the third mirror, and it's not linear, I'm just calling it the third mirror. If we look into the mirror of greed, the hungry ghost realm, this is the image. How this realm is depicted is just so, it's just so visceral when I think of it, with the swollen bellies. I'm doing that with my hands, the swollen bellies, the tiny neck, and the mouth no bigger than an eye of a needle. Yeah. And in this realm, it just constantly craving, constantly grasping food and drink. And every time in this realm that one grasps for the food and drink, it just turns into feces and liquid fire. Yeah. Yeah. And there are people who live in this realm, like I just radiate compassion to people in this realm. I was one of these people in this realm. I had disordered eating. I was just one of these people, constantly craving. And it wasn't like I was constantly craving for the food, because I would eat the food and purge the food. I couldn't even hold on to the food, but I was just constantly craving, didn't even know what it was that I was constantly craving for, which is why this is such a hungry ghost realm, because we don't even know what it is that we are hungry for. And in this realm, the ruby red Buddha appears, the Buddha Amitabha. Yeah, the meditation Buddha. Yeah. And the Buddha is showering us with food, but not the food that we eat, but the food of love and of compassion, because many of us in this realm, we are hungry for love, hungry for compassion, and we're just not aware of it. Yeah. And we need to become aware of what it is that we need. What is it that we are desiring to be able to come out of this state of mind? Yeah. And again, looking into this hall of mirrors, what's being reflected back now is this, the hell realm. I call this the hell realm of addiction. It's the mental state of anger. And anger is on a spectrum, okay? So we can be in this realm, we might not be so tormented. And if our mind is full of anger, yeah, we will be in that hell realm. It's the king of death appears, yeah, surrounded by flames, holding a mirror. And this king sees everything that we've done, Everything. Yeah. And it's said that in this realm, it's this realm is a very interesting realm, because often people can get stuck in this realm because they get caught by the past and thinking, how can I transform when I've done all these unskillful deeds? And it's almost as if the king, we think the king is ordering us to be punished, as if we are placing ourselves in a place of purgatory. Yeah, that's what's happened in this hell realm, that we've lost hope that there can be transformation. We've lost hope that there can be forgiveness. We've lost hope. And it's as if we've sent ourselves to purgatory. And this is the hell realm of addiction. Whatever that addiction is, whether it's alcohol, whether it's drugs, whether it's porn, whether it's love addiction, this is the hell realm of addiction. Yeah. We hear the sound of wailing, gnashing teeth. Yeah. And there is still hope in this hell realm, because a Buddha does appear in this. The Buddha does appear and really showering us. Yeah. Offering to pull us out of this realm of suffering. In fact, the Bodhisattva of Shitigarbha, the Shitigarbha pulling us out, if we are surrendering and open to being helped, because in this realm one has to ask to be helped, and if we can ask to be helped, then the Bodhisattva, the Buddha Shitigarbha, pulling us out of this hell realm. Yeah, offering us the nectar to free us from suffering, offering us the nectar so we can go straight to nirvana. You know, this place, we can, in any of these mental states, these worlds, we can awaken. Yeah, we can awaken. And then there is the animal realm. Yeah. This is a realm, you know, when I look in the mirror today and I look into the hall of mirrors, this is the mirror that's been reflecting me back. This realm of instincts, you know, it's depicted by animals. Yeah. And the reason why I say that for me, this is the mirror that can reflect me back. Being in lockdown, it's like, gosh, is this all we're doing? Eating, farting, sleeping, snoring, eating, farting, sleeping, snoring, eating, farting, sleeping, and snoring. It's very, very seductive. And you could just ask yourself, it's just so easy to get caught in this. And of course, you know, practice eating, farting, sleeping, snoring, having sex, eating. It's just this animalistic world of animals. Yeah. So the animals are really depicting savagery in a particular way. And it's a call for us to become more, traditionally it says civilized, but it's a call, I say, for us to become awake. What is the meaning of one's life? What are you doing? What is the meaning of one's life? Yeah, this is what it's asking us. Yeah. Yeah. And the blue Buddha, the Buddha Akshobhya, offering us potential. Yeah. And then, of course, we look in that mirror one more time, and of course, When I look in the mirror, I see myself reflected back. The human realm. Yeah, this is the human realm, and it's often depicted as a mendicant dressed in saffron clothes, carrying a begging bowl, walking with a staff. Is that image familiar for some of you? Because this was the fourth sight for the prince to go forth. It was the fourth sight. It wasn't the sight of aging or the sight of sickness or the sight of death that caused the prince to go forth and move from the heaven realm, the God realm. It was seeing a mendicant just carrying a begging bowl, walking around, radiating peace. And it's said that in a way that if we are born in this human form, we have the most potential to wake up. I sometimes think, you know, maybe sometimes I look in the fields and I see some of these animals and I think, and I look at the trees and I think they are perhaps already awake. And it's said in the human realm, we do have so much potential to be able to wake up and progress along the path. And the Yellow Buddha appears here, appears helping us, the Yellow Buddha of Ratnasambhava, the jeweled one, reminding us that life can be beautiful. And I think I just want to end with this because I do want to take some questions. It's I think sometimes when we think of the Four Noble Truths, we often think that the first truth, that life is suffering, and the Buddha never said that life is suffering. Yeah. So in this human realm, the Yellow Buddha, the Buddha of Ratnasambhava, the jeweled one, is reminding us of the beauty in life. What the Buddha said was that we will suffer because there is aging, sickness and death, because we don't want to be separated from loved ones, which is very different from saying life is suffering. Yeah. Yeah. And so these are the six realms, the six mental states that we as humans can dwell in. The heaven realm, the titan realm, the realm of conflict, the realm of animals, the hell realm, agony, terror, depression, the realm of craving, neediness, addictions, compulsions, the heaven realm, ecstasy, beauty, pleasure, the titan realm, violence, envy, jealousy, the realm of animals, instinct, survival, self-preservation, and the human realm, the realm of purpose, aspiration, and possibilities. Okay, we have some questions. Thank you. Yeah. Okay. I have decluttered my surroundings and my attachment to my job, now finding I feel a sense of almost boring emptiness, and guess it's natural consequence of letting go and feeling of less attachment, and potentially false guy ropes have been let go, and so feeling less stable, given less attachments, wondering how to deal with this vacuum, void feeling. Yeah. So let's just take a moment. I said a lot and then I just jumped into the first question. And just become aware of what it is that you're thinking and what you may want to ask. And while you're contemplating that, the person who wrote this question, would you like to come on and have a conversation with me? While you're thinking if you want to come on, I can actually answer this next question. I love the incantation to the elements you read at the start of the meditation. Can you say a little more about it and where it's from? It's mine, actually. I've just recently have put this together. So actually, it would I say it comes from my ancestors? Something it's never really mine, is it? So it's something that moved through me, and it's part of a bigger piece that I've written. So yeah, so that's where it comes from. Yeah. Okay. I always do ask when somebody asks a question, would they like to come on and have a conversation with me? Wondering how to deal with this vacuum void feeling. So what I want to say is actually what one is dealing with is a lot of story rather than feeling. Okay. So this is, and in a way, it's interesting that you say now finding I feel a sense of almost boring emptiness. Your boring doesn't sound empty to me. There's a lot going on in this boring. And it's, I guess it's a natural consequence of letting go and feeling of less attachment. So what I would say is it's that it sounds like that you perhaps are struggling with the sensation of neutral, which can be a very activating sensation. So in Buddhism, there are three feelings: pleasant, unpleasant, neutral, which is Vedana, which is hedonic tone in the body. Okay. And neutral, I say, can be the most activating because neutral is nothing much going on. And when there's nothing much going on, we get activated and we want to spice it up. It's like we're not contented with nothing much going on. And so as I hear you say, you've decluttered your surroundings and your attachment, nothing much is going on. And how can you stay with nothing much is going on and just being at peace with nothing much going on? So no propension, no proliferation of thought, and just sitting with nothing much going on and become aware of what's happening in the body. Because what will happen is one will begin to fill, FILL, fill the void. Fill the void with story. Fill the void with emotions. Whereas if we are really to be with the emptiness of nothing much going on, we'll only be in touch with sensations. Okay. I find myself in physical lockdown, depression lurking, and I freeze. Even brushing my teeth seems impossible. Animal realm for real, like the rabbit with the hunter close by. It's the most difficult mirror for me to overcome. Would you talk some about this paralysis, please? Again, I'm just wondering, the person who asked this question, if you would like to come on and have a dialogue with me. It's always an invitation. Okay, that's fine. So, yeah. Asking this question. What I want to say is that in all these realms, you could see them as protector realms, that we find ourselves in our realms because we are protecting ourselves from something. You know, and it's interesting because if we are in the animal realm, it is the realm of survival, it is the realm of self-preservation, it is the realm of instincts. And if we are in that place of just survival, self-preservation, what is it that we are protecting ourselves from? What is it that we are afraid of? And just as you say, even brushing your teeth seems impossible right now. So I would be asking you, what is the fear right now? What is frozen? What's happening? It's well done for just being able to see that this animal realm is reflecting you back. So I just want to say, in that mirror, know that actually you're in that mental state because you're needing to take care of yourself, okay? You're needing to protect yourself. And it's like that protection is because there is fear. And how can you say, okay, I'm not this young person anymore? Because often when we're wanting to protect ourselves, when we're wanting self-preservation, the past is in the present and something strong from the past has come up. And so we are maybe this 2-year-old, this 5-year-old, this 8-year-old, this 12-year-old, or perhaps even in the womb when we were fighting for survival, fighting for self-preservation. So what I would say is that you're asking how. It's very difficult to say how if I'm not able to have the dialogue with you. It's through the dialogue and the interaction that that you are able to know how, because I can't tell you. All I can do is point you in a way. In a way, one has to find the answers. If we go back to the prince and the prince's enlightenment, and I love going back to this because there's so much in it. If we go back to the prince's enlightenment, he wasn't listening to me giving a teaching. He wasn't listening to some great sage giving a teaching. He wasn't reading a book written by some great sage. He was meditating and found the answers within, okay? Yeah, the answers are within. So what we can do as teachers, all teachers are doing is pointing you back to your direct experience. Go back to your direct experience and see what it is that you can find, yeah. Okay, so again, with this paralysis, it would be a journey of when was the first time you ever experienced this lurking depression, this lurking freeze? This is where we begin. When did you first experience that? Yeah, what was it that you needed? And again, just knowing when you get into this place that you are protecting yourself from something. Yeah. How do I interact? One interacts firstly by doing a practice of what I call the four basic needs of the heart, because the interaction is firstly with yourself. How can you pay attention to yourself? How can you give yourself affection? How can you give yourself appreciation, and how can you give yourself acceptance? And you can find this meditation on Insight Timer, the five basic needs of the heart. The fifth is just allowing. That's how we learn to interact. One has to learn to interact with ourselves. If we don't have a good relationship with ourselves, we're going to find it incredibly difficult to interact with the rest of the world. How we interact with ourselves is how we interact with the rest of the world. So again, I'd really encourage you to do this practice called the five basic needs of the heart, and moving on from that, doing the practice of loving kindness and interacting with all those different stages of the friend stage, of the neutral stage, of the enemy of the mind stage. Okay, so let's see. I didn't quite get the Titan stage. Okay. The Titan stage is almost like a demigod stage. It's the realm of jealousy and envy. It's like our happiness is based on material wealth. It's like our happiness is based on having the new car. The happiness is based on having the latest iPhone or the latest laptop or the latest anything. Our happiness is based on going to good restaurants, eating good food. Yeah, and of course, this is never going to make ourselves happy. And often we're jealous because in this stage, when we're never, if our happiness is based on what we own and is based on having the best this, the best that, then we're never going to be satisfied. This is a stage of complete dissatisfaction. And when we're never satisfied, we move into blame, we project on other people, and we get resentful and jealous that actually other people have got what we want. And we get jealous because we want what other people have. And we can come into conflict and we can war. We can get really aggressive. I mean, some people in this realm go to great lengths to get what it is that they want. So it's a real stage. I mean, it's another realm of torment, you know. So it may be a place where you don't have to worry where your food comes from, where your next meal comes from. You don't have to worry about how you're paying your bills. So it's on a particular level, it's called the demigod realm because you have everything that you need if you really look. You have everything you need, but you are just not satisfied with what you have, and you want more, and you want more. This is the Titan realm. We can war with ourselves and we can war with others. So I hope that explains more. Yeah. Okay, lovely people. Any more questions? Or reflections? What is it that you're thinking? Any questions? Any reflections? Is there anything that you're taking away with you? Do you recommend any meditation or practice that opens one's heart to an enemy? That one is having a challenge with unconditional love. Thank you, Bimnasara, for your generosity. I would say that what I recommend is the five basic needs of the heart, and really, again, cultivating attention, affection, appreciation, acceptance, and just allowing. And then another one that I would say is that is to, with the practice of loving kindness, is put yourself in every stage. Really have the sense of, so you start with yourself, and then you move into a friend, but you have yourself as being a friend towards you. And then you move into the aspect of yourself that you're quite neutral to, and then the aspect of yourself that you don't like so much. And then another way is when, you know, mixing ethics with it, you can actually have the sense of the enemy radiating kindness towards you, deeds of loving kindness towards you, the enemy of the mind. You could actually have the sense of the enemy of the mind engaging with you with truthful communication and see what that feels like. And what I would say is that if you're having a challenge with this enemy stage, then stop putting them in that stage for now and just begin with people who slightly irritate us. You know, if you've got a partner, that sometimes your partner's going to irritate you, put them in that stage. You know, our friends can end up in all these stages. And so we learn to do it. And it's through learning to do it with people who we have small conflicts with that our heart begins to crack open and we can really have the enemies of the mind in a stage. And what I want to say about this is, it's not doing this practice isn't saying you have to start talking to the person who is the enemy. That's not what it's saying. It isn't saying you have to be good friends with the person who is the enemy. That's not what it's saying. What it's pointing to is, how can we, when this person comes to mind, how can we be peaceful? That's what it's pointing to. When this person comes to mind, how can we just wish them well? Yeah. Because when these people come to mind and we go into this propension, we go into this proliferation, we are the ones who are being harmed. Yeah. There's no peace in that. So that's what it's pointing to. How can we have peace? How can we let go of the story? How can we? Yeah. How can we let go of the story? That's how we work with the enemy of the mind. How do we deal with internal torment when in a moment of that painful experience? So one of the ways, if we are really in internal torment, get up and do something different. Because if you're in internal torment, you're going to be sitting somewhere, or you're not going to be doing much if your whole mind has been assailed by internal torment. In fact, coming back to the prince, I think we forget this. Coming back to the prince, when he sat to find an end of suffering, went into internal torment. So much so, he thought Mara was coming to kill him. That's internal torment. He thought Mara had sent his army to kill him. Yeah, so it was internal torment. And doubt arose, and doubt really arose. And what did the prince do? Ask for help. So in a way, if you really are internal torment, if possible, pick up the phone and ask for help. Is there somebody I can speak to? If you're not able to do that, it's just lift your head up, lift it down, lift your head up, lift it down, turn it side to side and start labeling lamp, window, trees, sky, books, bookshelf, picture, and begin to take yourself out of this torment. It may mean that you need to just kind of shake your hands or just do this with your hands, or just like this to just bring you out of the torment, or just stand up and sit back down again. Okay. These are some of the things that you can do to work with this internal torment, because you're not going to be able to connect to the breath. In internal torment, you're not going to be able to connect to the breath, but you may be able to just put a hand on your heart and just, or put a hand on your forehead, or just put a hand on here, or just stand up. Yeah, that's what you can do. Okay. So while I remember, I forgot to mention Dana. So before we go, is to mention Dana. Sangha Live is brought to you by a team of people, and it's unusual. It's you know, most times when we have things brought to us by a team of people, they're on a wage, but they're not on a wage. And so basically, how do they get remunerated for this generosity? It's from your generosity. Generosity, it's cyclical, isn't it? It's like we give and it comes back, we give and it comes back. So just a real opportunity for you to think about generosity if you're able to, and to give Dana. And also, part of the Dana you give actually goes to the teacher who is teaching as well. And so again, I'm here giving the teachings freely. There's no wage. It's not like I'm brought here and I know that when I finish, I'm going to get a check for $100 or for $50 or for whatever it is. No, I have absolutely no idea. And that's what's quite beautiful, is I have absolutely no idea what it is that will come through the spirit of generosity. So just an opportunity for you to donate with the donate button. Okay. How do we interact with you here, somebody said. Well, it looks like we've come to the end of our session. And so I want to end with the verses that came through me one day. We reverence the earth and give thanks for its food, shelter, and solidity in our bodies. We reverence the water and give thanks for its rain, its moisture, its fluidity in our bodies. We reverence the fire and give thanks for the sun, the heat and the warmth in our bodies. We reverence the wind and give thanks to the air, the inhale, the exhale in our bodies. We reverence space and give thanks for the space within us and surrounding our bodies. We reverence consciousness and give thanks for its awareness within and outside our bodies. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. Thank you so much for sitting with me. And thank you for all of you who come week in and week out. Thank you for your dana. Many of you who come here give dana weekly or pledge monthly. And so I just want to just say a big, big thank you on behalf of Sangha Life. And may you go well into the world. Go gently. Thank you.